it was bothering me also that everyone was saying Arabic is hard. It's too difficult. Ah, there's no need to learn Arabic. Yeah. English is easier. And I was like, on a neurological level, neuroscientists agree that English is one of the hardest languages to learn. And Arabic is one of the easiest languages to learn because it's more phonetic. But the way we teach it makes it so difficult and so complex. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this for my kids, but I really would love to see it. And that's why, like you reflect, I do want for everyone to stop saying Arabic is hard.
Welcome to another episode of Yalla, Let's Talk. Today we have with us none other than Diana Aldejani. Diana is a founder of EDU Technos, an entrepreneur. She has been featured in MIT as Woman of the Year. She has won numerous global awards and competitions. She has spoken about Arabic literacy, entrepreneurship, as well as how to juggle between motherhood and being an entrepreneur. We have with us none other than Diana, who also happens to be my sister. So welcome, Diana, to Yalla, Let's Talk.
Thank you, Ehan. And I'm very proud to have you as a brother as well. So this is awesome.
Thank you very much.
Seriously.
Very wholesome. But today I want to talk about you, and I want to talk about native languages and the stigma some of us may feel when we grow up to preserve that language. I want to ask you, where do you think that stigma comes from, that shame of speaking your native language?
Well, if you look at the research, there are multiple reasons why this happens. It's either for cultural reasons, historical reasons, and the majority of this phenomena that you don't want to speak in your native language if you're in a marginalized minorities in the society. This is one of the things. Another thing is, what if this language, your native language, is not the economical language? It doesn't give you any economical rewards. It doesn't give you money. So no, learn other language that's going to give you more money. So this is where it is a mix of, and it's a mix of reasoning. It depends on the context of the situation, but this is according to the research.
Okay, so according to the research, it's not just about you feeling shame, but there's actual economical reasons why you may want to prefer to speak a certain language other than another language.
The shame would come if you're, for example, if we're just going to focus on that, if you're a minority, then if you speak with this language, you might be ridiculed, you might not be respected. So it's also a function of a society, of what's happening at the moment and what experiences are you going through and how this is affecting you.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your experiences in trying to preserve your native language, coming to Canada and growing up in different places in the world?
Oh, my experience with the Arabic language. First of all, I was born in Kuwait. I'm Palestinian, born in Kuwait, and I learned Arabic the traditional way, participated in competitions, poetry, Quran memorization, story writing. So I love how this Arabic language speaks to the soul. I love that about it. And growing up as Palestinian, at some point when I was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, I don't remember exactly, but I remember I was told, oh, you're Palestinian, you're not Kuwaiti, but I'm living in Kuwait, and I haven't been to Palestine. And that was so identity-wise, I was like, how does that work? And I was so young to figure that out. And I remember that I found... it rescued me, Arabic language. It's like, this is the commonality between Palestine, Kuwait. This is the common thing. So this is what I'm going to be enjoying this space, basically.
So for you, it was about preserving your identity through language.
Yes, it's identity. It's very important. Also, how would you be able to explore other identities, other culture, how to explore if you're not confident of your own identity? It's very important. It comes with a lot of history.
So I want to just pause you there, because you mentioned about identity and learning the language as a way for you to be able to come to terms with who you are and from a cultural standpoint. Yeah. And something I want to go to is, on our last episode of the podcast, we had Maya Hussein.
Yeah.
And Maya said, if you learn or if you know the Arabic language, and this is something that you grew up with, why aren't you teaching it for your children?
Yes.
The question I have for you is, why do you think people are not teaching Arabic for their younger generations, for their kids.
If you're a parent, you're sending this little one into the school where you know they're going to be speaking English and your little one doesn't speak English, you would want to equip that little one with all of the language and the skills that you can. You want them to be able to communicate. You do not want them to be alienated. If you are doing it because you want your kids to have the most successful jobs when they grow up, then right now, like now there is a shift in trend, but up until this shift, if you speak English, then you get a higher paid job than if you just only speak or communicate with Arabic only. So the parents want the best for their kids, so they put them in the international schools, learn English, it's more important. Now there's the other, a very small category where they do it, okay, because it's trendy to speak English and it's for prestige, but still they have their kids' best interest, that they believe that this is the best interest for them so that they look mm-hmm. cool. Mm-hmm. So because of all of this, we need to think about parents and empathize with them. Moms right now, they're busy. They don't have the time to do it. They want to do it. They do not have the time to do it. And this is where we come in and we tell them, you know what? We hear you. We know what you're going through and we can help you. So it's life. This is basically why parents might not choose to teach their kids Arabic for all of these reasons.
Okay, so I heard a few things. So I heard there's this idea that if you equip them with better English and more English proficiency, that they're gonna climb up higher. And I think that's true if we were in the Middle East and in North Africa, mm-hmm. where you might not have access to learning English as much as we do have it here. But I see, like you said, there's different factors. Like there's some parents might feel like it's not the trendiest thing, maybe, which I never really understood, to be honest. But then I feel like a lot of it also happens to be like the priority wise, right? Like I, as a parent, I want to prioritize teaching my kids about mental health, about being emotionally healthy, art, creativity, and Arabic might not come in. And what you're saying is that they don't have the time. There's other things that's going on, and that's where you need to tap into resources. And there isn't as many resources out there that's catered towards equipping kids how to learn Arabic.
Yes.
Enter Idiotechnos and what you've been doing for the past, 15 years?
Yeah, I lost count, honestly. Yeah. I lost count.
So tell us a little bit more about how you started your journey with Idiotechnos and why that purpose, why that problem to solve.
Okay. So I always say I did not choose Arabic. Arabic challenge chose me. You know now, Arabic is very important to me. And getting married in the States, having my firstborn son there, and then we moved to Qatar. One of the main reasons we moved to Qatar is that I sent him to daycare, and I speak with him Arabic at the house. Within less than a week, he comes back and he speaks English. I was like, okay, I need to go to Qatar. And in the Middle East. So we're there. And he used to come to me and cry from Arabic homework, and he hates Arabic. And this was his statement. Give me English homework 4 hours. I don't mind, but Arabic is hard. I cannot understand it. And I had to figure out a way, because this was an alarm. If he's not learning it, he's going to lose it. And I cannot see him losing it. It's very important. And basically, I made him a game. I'm a computer engineer by profession, so I coded him a game because this is what he was into. It worked. So I started, he mastered the skill that he didn't know how to master it. He mastered it and it's fine. So I started synchronizing whatever the teacher is giving him for the week. Over the weekend, I code the games for him, so that he's doing this, and he was doing great. And then he came to me, all of that, I was in FinTech, full-time job, mm-hmm. and has nothing to do with EdTech. But then he said, I don't want to go to Arabic class. Can you teach me just in the house? So I gave the games, sorry again for the mic, so I gave the games to the teachers, and then slowly started more teachers asking about the games, more parents, my friends asking about the games, and then I was like, okay, this is a lot of work, and if I'm going to do this, there might be a business opportunity over here, and I needed to do some research about that, but the rest is history.
So you've learned a lot through this whole entire journey of yours, and I want to know, what are some key lessons in terms of helping people learn Arabic that you've learned and that you would want to tell someone who wants to either teach their kids Arabic or that they want to learn Arabic themselves? And when I say Arabic, it could be in any their person's native language for anyone who is listening that is not a native speaker.
Okay, so if it's Arabic, native or non-native speaker, any language in general, you need to find the right curriculum. This is important because right now the Arabic curriculum is presented with the gaps in it. It's making Arabic unnecessarily hard and complex. Mm-hmm, so find the right curriculum. The second thing is if you want to teach it, if you know Arabic and you want to teach it, there are gamification is important. And when I say gamification, to put reward system, put milestones, divide the, like, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
So you're saying that just approach it from a fun way, not just like, hey, I need to learn this.
And also, it's okay if you only, let's say, if you're reading it from a textbook, it's okay to read one page a week, as long as you are going through it. Forgive yourself. Don't be too tough on yourself or on the kids or on yourself. Like, it's okay. Sometimes you can finish more. Sometimes you can finish less. And this is where adaptive learning and the apps are important. This is where our apps also for adults is important as well. Okay. It can help out there.
So for you, it's more about like, hey, if you want to learn, take that first step.
Yes.
Appreciate the fact that it's gonna be a journey for you. Have fun with it. And that there are different things that you can do and different resources you can access. That's not just going to be like, hey, let's hire a tutor. You just need to go and look and then find certain things. I want to go back to a part of our conversation. We were talking a lot about identity. Identity can mean different things for different people. And having one part of a cultural element that might not necessarily be there for you, which is like learning a language, does not necessarily negate part of your identity. It just means you have to now evolve how you perceive yourself.
Exactly.
But do you find that learning and understanding your native language, like how does that impact how you perceive yourself, if that makes sense?
This is actually a very deep question. You cannot just answer it in like timid information. But for the tree to grow, there has to be roots. The deeper the roots, the higher it can grow. And the root is your culture, your roots, your heritage. Again, doesn't mean any culture is perfect and you take that culture with you. It's just a way for you to understand what's going on, understanding it and make a decision. Mm-hmm. Okay, do I like this? Don't I like this? It's your identity. Who are you? But this part is a piece of the puzzle. You have grandparents who speak that language, right? You have parents who speak that language. You are missing a piece of your identity if you cannot communicate with them in your native language. You're missing piece of that. Okay.
It's an interesting perspective because it's all about how you perceive who you are, and that's, I think, the foundation of it. What I find very interesting is that when we look at school systems here in Canada and the US, we see for secondary languages, it's first, it's usually English, it's always English, and then secondary languages, it's French, Spanish. And the way they justify it is like, you know what, there is this, you know, we all, this is our secondary language, and I get that, but there has to be some element of post-colonialism that is imbued in these systems, because how often do you see in our school systems, like, hey, let's, instead of you taking French, why don't you take Hindi or Urdu or Arabic or Mandarin and structuring it in that way? Yeah. And I want to ask, how do you find the school systems failing us in understanding our native languages?
Okay, that's a very good question. And there was actually a full roundtable at the UN Science Summit. I was part of that roundtable and we discussed this in very depth. And basically, You are absolutely right. One of the panelists was saying that you go to school having two languages, your native and English, you come out of school with one language only. Mm-hmm. So this is deep. This is terrible result. School should add skills, not take away skills. And you're absolutely right about this. But we have to mention here in Canada, for example, there is the foreign language program where it is subsidized by the government, where you can learn, I think, for an hour and a half or 2 hours once a week.
Is this for kids or for everybody?
For kids, for K-12. It's already there that you can learn any of the native languages. The problem with that, it's subsidized. And I think parents only pay $10 for the whole year. The problem with this, the curriculum that they're using is not effective. The teachers, the training is not gamified enough. There are a lot of gaps. The curriculum is not effective because you show me how many students went through that program, what are the retention rates, mm-hmm. how many of them actually mastered the language. This is what's happening right now.
Okay, I want to know, just switch gears to another part of this discussion. I want to talk about resilience and about you being an entrepreneur. All right. Because I've grown up seeing Deanna since we were kids, always starting businesses, always hustling. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people don't see is the challenges and the things you have to overcome. And I want to ask, what would you say the biggest challenge for you as an entrepreneur has been since you've started?
It's the balance between motherhood and an entrepreneur, and also myself. It's been a journey to figure out that I'm actually not paying attention to my mental health. It has been a revelation, realizing that I couldn't actually sit with myself and meditate. I couldn't. I'd be like trying to, and then jump. There's something to be done.
Do you feel like when you're an entrepreneur, you sometimes get too obsessive with the idea that you don't realize how to take care of other things in your life?
I wouldn't say obsessive with the idea, but I think this is something even with women, moms, generally parents, but I'm seeing it based on my circle with the moms, where we have it like our first response to put ourselves last. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everyone else needs to be served. Everything else needs to be done properly for everyone. And then if I have time, then great. If nothing, it's okay. There's mm-hmm. always tomorrow. So that's where it comes from, this. But I'll tell you something. When I quit my full-time job and I started my business, I started it under this mompreneur. I want to have more time with my kids. And I just had a newborn back then. And that didn't work this way. And I read the book, The One Thing. And to give you tools, how to identify, how to prioritize. It's a journey to figure out how to balance all this thing. But what worked for me, I realized that life is like, you know, the seesaw game. It goes mm-hmm. up and down. If it's standing still, it's not fun. It has to go up and down. If life is fully balanced, it's not fun. It has to go up and down. So when I push 1 week for edutechnos or work, then the next week I have to make it up for my family and myself and do. And just recently I started to say myself, it was work and my family, myself, just recently, as in the summer. That's it.
Okay. So I like that analogy. It's like understanding that you're going to have different ups and downs in your week, and in prioritizing between different aspects and elements of your life. I liked how you mentioned that it was always between family and work. And up until recently, you started realizing you also need to be part of that equation. And I wonder, what made you realize that?
A friend of mine, we were talking, and I also was having severe, I was biting on my jaw. And I then reached to a point where I couldn't sleep for a whole week. And it was literally physically, biologically, I had to find a solution, and I made it worse, and I was crying like a baby. And then I was like, okay, I need to figure out something over here. And I would go to the doctors and they would be like, I think you're stressed. And like, I'm not stressed. It's like, I take offense that they're telling me you're stressed.
Isn't that funny? Sometimes when we're stressed, we might not be aware of it, but our body will tell us.
Yes.
And it will tell us in different ways.
And this is a new skill I have acquired, where I would listen more to my body, to if something is happening, because I learned that I'm not really that much in tune. I filter it out, because you need to focus and get stuff done. But But as an entrepreneur, Hani, you really have to believe in what you do, because if you don't believe in what you do, it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
It's not easy. People tell you become an entrepreneur, you work less or whatever, or you become a millionaire or whatever. That doesn't happen. There is a mission. For me, when I say Arabic chose me, I did not choose it. I would have chosen robotics and animation. This is something I love. But my kids, because both of them needed me to do that, so I could not quit on them.
It's because you had a why. It's like, yes, you had a powerful reason to draw you into teaching them and solving that problem.
Yeah, and it wasn't just me. It's my kids. And then if I don't do it, who's going to do it for them? The reason is not just also my kids, Hani.
Yeah.
It was bothering me also that everyone was saying Arabic is hard. It's too difficult. There's no need to learn Arabic. Yeah. English is easier. And I was like, on a neurological level, neuroscientists agree that English is one of the hardest languages to learn. And Arabic is one of the easiest languages to learn because it's more phonetic. But the way we teach it makes it so difficult and so complex. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this for my kids, but I really would love to see it. And that's why, like you reflect, I do want for everyone to stop saying Arabic is hard. No, go to EduTechnos. Everything you need is right there for kids, adults, teenagers, teachers. We train them to tell them how to do. Ministry of Education, we have the curriculum. I want to eradicate Arabic is hard.
I like that, because you're right. It's not just that there's a stigma about like, hey, don't speak your language because it's not cool enough. It's more like, it's difficult to to learn another language. Mm-hmm. But the way we perceive learning native languages like Arabic is that it's difficult. And the way our school systems have set up do not really promote that. And at the same time, the alternative sources, if you grew up in this part of the world, is generally let's go to Saturday school or Sunday school and, you know, for a few hours go into learning Arabic.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, if the Arabic countries with the Arabic curriculum is producing, now they're doing better. But if you think about it, how many of the students are Arabic readers who love reading the story? We're still building this up. The gap in the curriculum is very simple. They teach phonics, and even in the Sunday schools or wherever, they use the same curriculum. We teach phonics. They don't teach phonics. They teach letters. And then the next step, let's start reading. What happened between the letters and how to read? This is where EduTechnos bridge the gap.
Okay.
So that's the gap.
You're bridging the gap, solving that problem.
Yes.
I love it. Deanna, I want to first and foremost thank you so much for coming to Yalla Let's Talk, sharing all what you know about Arabic and breaking those barriers, both from a cultural standpoint as well as from a technical and academic standpoint, and providing that accessibility to children and just people in general. What would you say is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
The best piece of advice I've ever received was from Tete, my grandmother, Allah yarhamha, Tete Munzer. And she told me a story. There's this poor village that they needed to pull together their resources, and each one of them has to donate one drop of oil in a barrel so that they would be able to fill it up so that they can use that oil in the cannons to defeat the enemy. And when the morning came and they opened up the barrel, it was empty. And it was empty because everyone was saying, what would my drop do? And this is where we say that, okay, when I work with EduTechnos, I acknowledge that it's one drop, but it's a very important drop. It takes a village to do anything, but everyone has to do their part, basically, and use their one drop. You have to give your drop.
You have to give your drop. That's the quote of the day. I know. I understand what you're saying, is that everyone has to contribute.
Yes.
Even if you think it's just one little thing, it can make a big impact. And it goes back to like civic engagement and voting. Mm-hmm. It's like every vote counts, every drop, everything you
do. Absolutely. And I'll tell you something. When I first started EduTechnos, I don't remember, there was a press happening and there were comments like, this is EduTechnos, this is what they do, games to make Arabic curriculum fun, blah, 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 and all of that. And there was one comment that said, impossible. this needs deep pockets from government for such initiative to happen. And there was a reply, but sir, this is already happening. And it was like, that was a drop. And it just, hopefully it will make a difference. I hope so.
Well, thank you very much for all this incredible wisdom. Like, we've learned so much about the stigma that comes from one learning Arabic, as well as the technical barriers to accessing and learning native languages. Like you said, and the best piece of advice is, if everyone can just do one thing, one aspect, then we start building a whole new world for ourselves. So if for example, if you're asking, it's like, hey, why aren't people learning my native language? What can you do to contribute to that? If you see a problem, how can you actually make that change? And it starts also within. Now, Diana, I want to leave the last spot and the last few minutes just for you to talk to the camera and to tell the audience and our community where they can find you, where they can learn about EDU Technos. Like, take it away.
Well, thank you, first of all, for having me, Hani. I'm really very proud of everything that you're doing. Amazing seeing Yalla and everything that you have been accomplishing. As for EDU Technos, we really believe in the importance of teaching Arabic the right way, the fun way. And you can reach us at edutechnos.com, on the Instagram, Facebook. Also, it's called EDU Technos, EDUTECHNOZ. One of the things that I want to say is, we really make a difference in the kids. The most important thing is, kids come in our sessions, they're scared, terrified, hate Arabic. They leave the session excited. They want to come back again. Kids love Arabic. Adults enjoy learning Arabic as well. Teachers and parents as well, please keep monitoring the advertisement that we have. You can always subscribe to our newsletter. We provide free CSR workshops where we teach you where are these gaps in the curriculum, the way that you're teaching your kids or students Arabic, and how can you make it better for them. And we'd love to take this to ministries. We'd love to take this to the khalas. We don't want to see Arabic as hard anymore. It's, the solution is here. It's just about making it everywhere, giving it away to everyone.
Well, thank you very much. That's a very powerful mission. And with that, with these final words, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. Please don't forget to subscribe. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, find us on Anchor, YouTube, and even most recently, Anghami. So subscribe to us and hashtag YallaBye.